Donald on the Kitchen talks about food. Donald on the Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on the Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donald on the Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Priskintas.
We gather here once a week to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. We're glad you're with us. We've been around our kitchen table here for quite a few years here, and we are at the studio of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames.
And it is beautiful this time of year. Oh, my, the hydrangeas are coming. The hydrangeas are coming.
I forget about it. You have hydrangeas?
I have a lot of hydrangeas.
Summer.
And they're happy this year because of the rain. Last year, they were kind of stunted. And I do pick them, especially later in the season, and dry them because they make wonderful dried flowers. So I have them around for all year. Last year, they were so shabby, I didn't even pick them. So the dried hydrangeas that I have are 2 years old already. So this year, they are looking happy.
They work just fine. Have you ever tried that trick where you can make them blue by adding, I don't know what, something to the soil, or you change the colors?
I have some pink ones. Yeah, you have to acidify the soil.
Okay.
Right. In fact, I probably should do that. I have some pink ones along the north side of my house. Not terribly pink. I don't think there's a lot of blue ones in Ames. I just think we have the wrong soil. Like, you go to other parts of the world, like New Zealand, where they have these dark ruby-colored ones, or France. They have lots. In Brittany, they have lots and lots of blues, purples, ta-ta-ta-ta. We just don't get that here, but we do have those lovely white snowballs. In fact, there's a nice bush right in front of the radio station.
Oh, there is.
Yep.
It's rather ironic that they're called snowballs when they come right in the middle of June.
Wistful thinking. But they are really pretty, and I do love them, and they are happening this year.
And in this hot, hot bit of summer, Central Iowa really finally did get some rain, so we are sort of breathing a little easier, even though we're sweating a lot more. But we are breathing easier because there is rain and things are green. Well, summer. It's a time to
summertime,
slow down.
Summertime.
It is. This is time to slow down. It's not hard to slow down when it's as warm as it's been. But today especially, it's time to think about our trip around the sun. It's the solstice.
It's the official first day of summer. And I have to say, last night, we had the highest nighttime temperature that we've had so far. Apparently, it did not go below 78.
Yeah, it kind of stayed right up there, didn't
it? A little sticky out there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very good, very good. Well, we have to think about our trip around the sun, because you forget about that. I mean, you get kind of wrapped up in your own little things and realize we are on this planet and we're going around this sun. And the fact that we are tipped in our orbit, or tipped on our axis, the sun hits us a little squarer in the face this time of year.
Well, I really like to celebrate solstice, and one of the reasons I like to do that is because it is a phenomena that is kind of celebrated and noticed all over the world. It's not a cultural thing. It is a, would you call it geologic? I don't know. It's celestial. It's everybody experiences it, and of course, the closer you are to the equator, the less you experience it. Like, where was I reading? I don't know. Somewhere in South America, they're close enough to the equator that the difference between the longest day and the shortest day is only something like 8 minutes or
so. Oh, really?
Right. They don't. Obviously, I suppose if you're at the equator, you wouldn't experience it at all. But then, like the Swedes and the northern climes, of which we're close but not the same, is they have the land of the eternal sun. You know, it's like light almost 24 hours a day up. So it's something that's fun to celebrate because there are all kinds of different ways that it's celebrated. I mean, the Chinese celebrate it, the Afghans, hopefully the Ukrainians, poor people this year. But it is something that is global. So,
right.
And the different ways that people celebrate it are, Oh, golly. There's been a, like, CNN had an article, and the New York Times had an article, and then the Wiki Witches had an article, you know, all the different things you can do in the solstice. And the things that appeal to me, of course, have to do with, you know, stopping and having gratitude for your surroundings and your environment. And a lot of them have to do with fire, although it's so hot right now. But a traditional one, especially in European countries and Nordic, more Nordic areas, is you build a bonfire and you jump over it. Like, even in Greece, they do that.
Ooh.
And, ooh. And of course, if you're getting really macho, the bigger the bonfire, the more you have to jump. So
I think I'll just watch by.
Exactly. Or maybe I'll light a candle and jump over it or something. But, and there was one tradition I was reading about. So it's also a traditional time of mating. Of course, always associated with fertility. And in a lot of more peasant cultures, which are, you know, really grounded in nature, let's say, right? So there were different things that the young girls would do, and then they would have a dream of their future husband and da-da-da-da-da, like picking plants, which are at their fullest right now, of certain plants, and then you put them under your pillow or things like that. But there's one I was reading about where the couple, the betrothed or the interested parties, held hands and jumped over the fire. And if they were able to hold hands all the way through the jump and not let go of each other's hands, it portended a solid marriage with longevity.
A bit of trust.
Oh, yes. Yeah, probably. So, you know, there are just all kinds of things to do, but do something. I think the actual peak of the solstice was rather early this morning, but tonight is a good time to do it. You know, even if you just take a few moments to sit on your front porch and appreciate the light and the feel of there, after it's cooled off a bit, of course, right?
Yes, and notice how the sun is extremely much overhead now. And, well, I don't know if you can remember that far back to the winter solstice where the sun kind of goes way to the horizon, not as far as some parts.
Well,
of the world,
you see how it hits in the different parts of your house where it comes through the windows. Like, I've had to rearrange all my window plants because they're actually not getting that much sun because it's not pushing it into the house.
When you realize how small we are and how small a planet and where that sun is hitting, it's a reason for a pause of reflection, I think.
Yeah, so reflection is always a good idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, at this point with so much turmoil in the world and amplified on the media, you know, sometimes it's really important to just focus your thoughts on the immediate surroundings, the things that you can positively contribute to in your life, the, you know, your neighbors, the plants, the animals, and, you know, focus on the small daily realities. You know, after all, the war in the Ukraine is terrible, but fortunately it's not in our backyard right now. So we need to appreciate that.
Yes.
And the peace and the bounty that we do have here.
Yes.
And it is green and bountiful out right now. So
enjoy summer.
Happy
summer.
Solstice.
Happy solstice. Oh, also, a bit of a news item. The good news about the Juneteenth being officially
a national holiday.
Now, what a good idea. I mean, if you can't celebrate that, you have a really hard heart, people out there. So Juneteenth sounds like a good thing to say. It's such a happy word anyway.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of fun. And also, I think it was either yesterday or something, International Yoga Day.
International
Yoga Day.
Who picks these things?
Oh. I don't know. It's a good PR campaign, though, you know?
Which reminds me, Donna, remember, I don't know, maybe last year sometimes, you were telling me that the latest craze was hot yoga.
Yes. Don't we still have the hot yoga studio here in Ames?
I don't know. Do we? I bet we do.
I think we do. Out in Somerset, maybe, or someplace? Yeah.
Hot, as in physically hot.
The idea is they heat it up to, I don't know, 90?
Ooh.
No, must be, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it's like doing yoga in a steam room or something. It's supposed to be, like, I would think of it as a combination of a sauna and yoga. Two things that are very good for you.
Yeah, in that, we always try to make the most of what we do.
Right.
So, that sounds good. So, hot yoga, you could maybe just do it outside.
Do it
now,
on your
folks.
Front porch, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you want to keep your muscles. Okay, but I've come up with something else. It's called hot gardening, Donna. Hot gardening.
Because
although I do not go out in the middle of the day, there are things that need to be done out there. And I just put on a hat and make sure to wear a shirt that covers my arms. And,
do you prefer early morning or late afternoon?
I kind of do both. I kind of check things in the morning and then do any heavy lifting or anything that needs to be changed late in the afternoon. And, everything's in now. I mean, and what can I do except maybe add a bit of water or pull a weed or two? But you can go
out and appreciate.
You have to check.
And I have to say lately the temperatures in the morning, because the birds have been so cacophonous. Like, I have a juneberry bush.
Juneberries.
Right outside my bedroom window. And it has grown to be two stories tall. And this year, it had quite a nice flush of berries. But, boy, they came and went really fast. But the birds, there were 2 days early in the morning, right at sunrise, like 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, there was so much bird noise and activity. They cleaned that bush off really, really fast. So I was up, you know, when it's going to be 95 outside in the morning, it's quite pleasant. Really, it's that beautiful feeling. You wake up and you just take your coffee out to the back patio or on the front porch, and it just feels, you know, I'm sorry. I love heat and humidity up to a point.
My husband says I'm part plant. I do sort of like the warm time. Speaking of juneberries, if you can wrestle some of those berries away from the birds, I just love them.
Yeah, good luck to it.
So good. They're so good. And
they're
juneberries.
Tiny.
The plant juneberries. It's often planted just as an ornamental, but it's also called serviceberry, or it's called Saskatoon.
Oh, that's a Saskatoon. Is that what that is? I like that word, but I did not know.
That's what they are. And there's a lot of different varieties now.
Do you call it a Saskatoon berry?
I guess so.
For those of you, they grow very well here in Central Iowa. And they, we have a bush. We put it in for ornamental reasons. And it, in 15 years, has grown quite large.
Ooh, they like it here. They do. Well, thinking of summer, let's listen to a past Donna Lana Kitchen summer show from the summer of 2019. Remember before COVID? So we had a show then, and this show starts out with, we talk about a bug, we talk about a train, we talk about good food. So let's listen to the show from the summer of 2019. Things are green, things are humid, and I brought Donna a bug today. I found a dried out, I think it's a cicada or something, just the carapace, the outside.
Well,
I found it in my garden.
It has claws on it or something, maybe.
Well, I don't know. It's got those big reddish, brownish eyes, and those things are just so pretty. Whatever this little outside skeleton is, it's a good thing.
And a local bug.
A local bug.
The shell of a local
bug. The shell.
The exoskeleton, I believe.
Is
that what it's called?
I'm sure that is what it's called. I want to report a thing that I took part in this morning. Got frantic calls from friends. Oh, the train's coming through. We know. The trains always come through Ames.
Oh,
this was
I heard it.
A special train, a steam train, the Union Pacific. Number 844, Living Legend, Steam Train,
left Boone about 9 o'clock this morning. It was built in 1944. It was originally for high-speed passenger service. Quite an impressive, very big, very black thing. It was retired to a freight train in 1957. And in 1960, they were going to scrap it, but they saved it from the scrapyard. And it is on special service now. It is, for those who like trains, it was loud, it was big, it was fast and shiny. And it's kind of a special deal for the Union Pacific. That is the Living Legend Northern Number 844.
And it does have a different... Yeah. I mean, I was sitting out in the backyard, and I hear this sound. Of course, it's a normal train sound, but it's not the one that we usually have. And I didn't know what it was.
Well,
I thought,
It's a steam train. And for those that like that, there were people
train.
With their cameras out. And
does that mean it must have a steam whistle?
Yeah. It was something.
Very
it was
cool.
Big. And it was pulling a bunch of cars. The cars were not of this. I don't know. Cars were vintage. I don't know if they were from the same vintage, but they were historic sort of Union Pacific trains. And I heard they're making a turn north, going through Nevada, up into Wisconsin, Minnesota, and kind of finding their way back.
Oh, really? Major tour?
Oh,
huh?
It's a major tour.
Oh boy! Oh boy!
So those that have like trains, and we do, it sort of connects us all. And there we were all sitting there at the Ontario, Ontario Street and North Dakota Avenue train track. And there was a little station there at one time. And we could have all been waiting to get on, but we weren't. We were just waiting for it to go by. So, Donna, you have a few things that you found that you wanted to share with us. What have you found for us, Donna?
Okay, listen up, folks. We have some definitive science here. This was released by the... Alzheimer's Association International at their conference in Los Angeles. Studies from the scientists at the University of Exeter. So this is a real genuine thing. So drinking at least one artificially sweetened beverage daily was associated with almost 3 times the risk of developing stroke or dementia.
No, it's artificial, not sugar in general.
Like we're talking about diet sodas, any of those kinds. This is artificial sweeteners. Once again, we're here to remind you that maybe that's not a good idea. I would assume that that also covers, like, you know, people putting those artificial sweeteners in their coffee. I'm not sure. But the direct quote was, I'm going to say it again so that you guys remember this, drinking at least one artificially sweetened beverage daily was associated with almost 3 times the risk of developing stroke or dementia. Okay.
There you go. Oh, well, we encourage hydration during the summer.
Absolutely.
Drink lots
Nothing
of things.
Wrong with water. And since we're going to talk about it, cucumbers.
Oh, very good.
Put some cucumber slices in your
good.
Water. You know, or eat cucumbers. They're like 95% water.
Or watermelon.
Watermelon. Yes, yes. Just good. Stay away from the diet sweetened, artificially sweetened sodas.
Good. And then there's some things. You ran across the things about farmers markets that people should know.
Well, Lana, you're the queen of farmers markets.
Well,
so.
This was kind of a nice article. It kind of went through things. And I've been kind of eating out of my garden for a long time, so none of this stuff is new to me. But for some folks, coming up to a stand and finding a farmer there and finding, like, food in the raw in front of that farm, it might take a few people aback. They have to get used to seeing things not wrapped in plastic.
Well, the obvious reason to go to the farmer's market is, first of all, the stuff is really fresh, okay, really seasonal, and you're keeping money in the local community. So whoever shows up to sell something at the farmer's market is bound to be your neighbor. So if you buy from them, then their dollars stay in our local economy as opposed to shopping at some of the very some of our supermarkets are fairly local, like the Hy-Vee chain, which is regional and mostly in Iowa. And, of course, Wheatsfield. But a lot of the other places that one could shop in town are definitely not local. So you know, that's a lovely thing. You get to meet your neighbors, you get to hang out, and you are reminded of what really is in season. But the other thing that happens at farmers market is because of the way food is grown and travels from large distances in this country, a lot of it has to be harvested before it's ripe or completely ripe because it ripens on the way. Or there are lots of fruits and vegetables that just don't travel well. Or varieties, the old-fashioned, like obviously strawberries. A strawberry that's grown in Iowa and picked when it's ripe is very different from the ubiquitous brand that comes from California that, although they look nice, they often don't have very much flavor, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and the texture can often be a little bit woody. Mm-hmm. So if you're eating strawberries in season, and the same thing goes for tomatoes, because tomatoes are coming up, right, Lana?
Tomatoes are coming up, I promise.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Right now at the farmer's market, we're having tomatoes that are grown in hoop houses around the area, like Lee's Greens has them, and golly, they're not as good as fresh on the vine, which we will be getting soon. But right now, they sure taste better than the kind of cardboard ones that you see at the supermarket. The other thing that you can get, for example, you never see a white eggplant in the grocery store. You know why?
Huh.
Because eggplants bruise very easily. So the black ones that you see all the time, you don't see the bruises. But if you travel a white eggplant, you know, halfway across the country in some kind of refrigerated freight condition, they aren't going to look very nice in the supermarket. So you can't really buy white eggplants in the supermarket. Now, why would you buy a white eggplant? Well, there are some varieties like the, what's it called, Rosa Bianco. They're not only beautiful, but they have slightly different flavors and different fleshy characteristics. And there are just things that one can buy in the farmer's market that don't taste the same anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh, and there was a little note about eggs. Some people sell eggs at farmer's market. Now, I get this complaint. I sell a few eggs. I have a small chicken flock. People get this complaint, especially around Easter. Oh, your eggs are so hard to peel. Now, why is that, Donna?
Well, fresh eggs are hard to peel, so I guess you should go to the supermarket for your Easter bunny eggs and buy the old ones. But here's what happens. As the egg sits, the shell becomes more porous. It lets out more oxygen and more carbon dioxide out. And this raises the acidity of the egg white, making it come off the shell more easily. The egg also shrinks as it dries out, creating an air gap between it and the shell. So the tip for boiling hard-boiled eggs that are fresh, you have two options. You can, after you've boiled them, you can put them in a bowl of ice water for a few minutes.
Uh-huh.
Or you can add baking soda to your water before you boil them.
I should try that. I
two,
never
two
have done
options
that.
Because
that would be good.
With Lana, we have often really fresh eggs.
Yeah.
The other thing that
so for your deviled eggs for your picnic,
right?
This time
right, because
year.
It's boiled egg season here, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The other thing, now we won't have these in our farmers markets, but we will be seeing them around town because the Missouri peaches are coming in.
Oh, yes. Now, talk about hit and miss. Now, peaches look, they have got them trained to look really good on the shelf, but kind of a, I got some peaches. I will not mention where I got them from, but they were not good on the inside at all. They must have traveled a long way.
Still, were they mealy?
Yeah.
I mean, it's early, but okay. I've been, you know, I'll buy one or two peaches and take them home and see if they're any good.
Yeah.
And then if they're good, but we're not there yet. I have not had any good ones yet, but the early peaches, this is the other thing you have to remember is the early peaches are always, they're called clingstone or cling. That means they don't just flop right off they're harder to peel.
Mm-hmm.
They don't, when you're peeling them and pitting them, the peach actually sticks to the inner peach pit. And then the later peaches are called, what are they called?
Cling free.
Freestone.
Oh, freestone.
Freestone. There we go. Right.
Ding, ding,
so we'll be getting into that pretty soon. I have not hit. We've got California peaches in the market. I've seen some South Carolina ones, too. So we have peach season to look forward to.
I like peaches.
And there may be a few. I planted a peach tree in my backyard about 5 years ago. So sooner or later, I may have a peach tree.
Some of them work here, and if you are blessed with a peach tree, I'm trying for peaches too. The first year, they're pretty small, but I'm talking to them every now and then.
Well, one can always dream of peaches.
Local food.
So
local
food.
Very good. Well, the little notes about things to look for at farmers markets.
Yeah, and in case you don't know and you need a reminder, Saturday mornings in downtown Ames, there is a farmers market on Main Street. There's also a small gathering of farmers out at the North Grand Mall on Saturday as well.
Saturday and they Wednesday afternoon.
That's right. That's right. Uh-huh. So you got a couple of options
And,
there.
And check other small towns around here. There are nice people off the back of their pickup, and they have good food this time of year.
Yeah, the Grimes Corn is out with their trailer on the corner of 13th and Grand.
There's
probably some other places around town.
It's time.
Yep.
There's one reason we live in Iowa, and I think the sweet corn is one of them.
Oh, now, just FYI, there is now genetically modified edible sweet corn. Uh-huh. It's not all just field corn. So if you want the traditional varieties, you might be sure to ask who you buy from, what variety they have planted this year.
Very good. Very good. So segueing from sweet corn to, I made a good chocolate cake this last weekend.
I'm here to testify.
It's
love that.
It's a chocolate cloud cake from Richard Sachs. I got this book for Christmas called Genius Desserts, 100 Recipes That Will Change the Way You Bake. And, it has.
Okay, we've raved about this book before. It's pretty good.
It's really good. And I found this. Now, this chocolate cloud cake is mainly a chocolate souffle kind of cake. And I picked
Does that make it a flourless cake? Is there flour in it?
No, there's no flour.
It's a flourless chocolate cake.
These recipes tend to be really, really simple on the ingredient side, but have a whole lot of good technique advice in it.
Well, and this idea of it's basically a chocolate-flavored fallen souffle. And do not be intimidated. They're actually fairly easy to make in terms of a cake, don't you think so?
A springform pan is handy.
Yes.
But once you get that, you can conquer the world.
I used to use a fat-free recipe for some of my Hollywood clients because it's basically egg whites. And I would serve them make little ones in ramekins. So you just pull them out and then you have individual portions and you don't have to unmold them or anything.
Mm-hmm. This is good.
It's really
chocolate
easy.
Chocolate cloud cake, 8 ounces of really good bittersweet chocolate, half cup of unsalted butter. You melt that. Put that on to melt. 6 large eggs, 1 cup sugar, 2 tablespoons cognac or Grand Marnier. I did happen to have some Grand Marnier. Finely grated zest of 1 orange. That's it. Now, you have to read the recipe carefully because as you're melting the chocolate and getting your springform can ready, the eggs.
You have to separate them, right?
Yeah, you want eggs like to be fluffy, fluffy, fluffy. So in 2 small bowls, separate 4 of the eggs. In the large bowl, whisk 2 whole eggs and the 4 egg yolks with half a cup of sugar until combined. Now, with the 4 egg yolks, you beat and beat and beat until you have white, fluffy egg white clouds.
With the whites.
So you have egg whites
that
are fluffy.
And then you fold them in, right?
Well, you let the stuff that you've been melting cool off a little bit.
Absolutely.
So you do not want to excite the eggs at all. So you put that on. Put it in, fold it in, fold it in, fold
it
in.
So folding, I love that term. It's a spatula. So actually you've got your heavier mixture in the bowl already. You put the whites right on top of that. And then you, in big circular motion, scraping the sides of the bowl, you just kind of envelop the ingredients together.
And all the time,
gently,
subtly. You're doing this, you say, air, keep the air in there.
It's not as complicated as it sounds. It's sort of like in the process of cooking, it's a moment when you kind of slow down and do it rather thoughtfully.
It's a sensual sort of thing.
Yes, it is. Folding. Yes. Folding in the egg whites.
Yeah. Chocolate cloud cake. And after this is all mushed together so you don't see any streaks anymore.
No mushing, Lana. Folding.
Folding. Scrape the batter into a pan. Springform pan. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but it's already buttered or something. Yeah.
And then you cook it for 35 to 40 minutes. I thought that was good for a hot day because you wouldn't have to have the oven on for hours or anything. So 35 to 40 minutes on a rimmed baking sheet, this springform pan. And then you take it out. Be careful not to overbake the cake. Take the cake out on and put it on a rack. And this is it. The center will sink as it cools.
Right. You want the souffle to fall.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay, because that little fallen down center is the place that you're going to put some whipped cream later.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, plus, it gives the cake, as it cools, its sort of molten quality. You know, it's like thick, rich. It's very moist.
Yeah, very moist. For it, because it's butter, it's chocolate, and eggs, and sugar. And that's it. So it is pudding-y in the middle, although the time, I took it out at like 37 minutes just to kind of split the time there. It was perfect. First time I've made this. Run the tip of a knife around the edge of the cake and carefully remove the sides of the pan. I just left it on the bottom. I suppose you could like slide it off the bottom of the springform pan, but I didn't want to press my luck there.
Yeah, you could, and especially if you had lined the springform pan with any kind of like baking parchment paper or something like that. But and I got to say, this is a good recipe. It was delicious. I had a piece.
Yep. And then you can store any leftovers, if there are any.
No, there were no leftovers.
No, there was some for breakfast tomorrow. There was one little honker piece. You can, anyway, this is a note from the recipe. It says, store any leftovers airtight in the refrigerator. They won't be very presentable, but they'll make a delicious snack. And yeah, they do. Yeah, because it's kind of crumbly and it's mushy. And boy, is it ever good. That's chocolate cloud cake from the recipe book called Genius Desserts 100 Recipes That Will Change the Way You Bake. And it's from the kitchen of Richard Sachs.
And we might be able to find it on the internet. I have the book at home. There is also a fat-free version in a book by Alice Medrich.
Ah. And souffle-ish sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Chocolate cake. Appropriate anytime, I think. We'll take a little break here. This is KHOY. And this is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Talking corn, cucumbers, chocolate cake, stuff to find at farmer's market. We've got lots more to say about cucumbers and corn, though, Donna.
Well, first of all, I want to remind everybody that corn, you know, the first corn that comes in is, in my mind, always the best. I, you know, maybe
that's
it's just,
we've been waiting all year.
Yeah, I guess so. But so my first ears of corn, and I had two for breakfast, I don't put anything on them. I just steam them lightly. I don't boil the heck out of them. I just steam them lightly. But then after that, of course, there's the salt and pepper. Butter and salt, and some people put separate pepper. But I just want to remind that there's a lot of other toppings you can put on corn. Like the classic Mexican one, and corn is called elotes, is actually you slather it with mayo.
Oh,
and then you add a little lime juice, some ancho pepper, salt, pepper, cilantro. Now, if, and then they used their cotija cheese, which is their crumbly, which you can buy in some of the, it's available around here. Or you can put, crumble a little feta or ricotta on
it. Oh, that feta, that sounds good. Yeah. I don't know about mayonnaise. It sounds awfully greasy.
Well, it's instead of butter.
Butter, okay.
Yeah, it's no greasier than butter. Right. In fact, even a simple version is something I like to do is, mayonnaise instead of butter, and then ancho chili and a little lime juice, just, and salt, of course. Yeah. And then there are lots of other, I read one that was like vegan, so it was coconut oil, I've forgotten. I think coconut oil, lime, and then they actually used some toasted coconut flakes, kind of broken up and sprinkled on it too, with salt, of course. But, you know, it's that same theme of some kind of oily, greasy stuff that, you know, makes everything stick to it. And then, of course, something salty. And then something a little acid makes it perk right up. But let's get creative with our corn here.
That's good. Yes. Sweet corn, I don't think there's anything better. I can eat it and eat it and eat it all this season. And just like strawberries or watermelon, you kind of eat your fill and then you wait till next year. However, do remember, you can, when you get just up to your eyeballs in corn, put some in the freezer. I steam the ears and scrape the corn off of the steamed ears. You can let it cool off.
What's your kernel producing technique? What do you use?
I just use a good sharp knife.
Yeah, I do too. I have
just,
a little.
I stand it on
I
the
have
end.
A thin serrated knife. That so I just stand it in a bowl because they kind of fly all over and just turn it around and keep going.
Yeah. You can cook a whole bunch at a time or steam a whole bunch at a time and then let it cool off, run it under cold water and let it just drip there. And
so do you take it off after you steam it or before?
Yeah, after.
Ah, I tend to do it before. Ah.
I don't think it matters.
Well, the only difference is once it's cooked, the little kernels kind of stay more together. Which, depending on what you're doing for it, I also like to just take it off the cob really quickly while it's fresh and juicy. And then, boy, it cooks. Don't overcook it. And that's always true with your corn. There is no need to overcook that corn. It is sweet and just, it's kind of like green peas. You know, you just barely hit the heat with it.
Very good. Very good. Sweet corn. Ah.
Coming. Yeah.
And
cucumbers.
You look like you've got a whole bunch of cucumber recipes over there. And I love cucumbers. And I just eat them as cucumbers, but you can do a lot more with them.
Well, you're a pickler.
I mean,
and there are different kinds of cucumbers, too. Some that are, you know, really for pickling, right?
Right. There's some that are actually called a pickling cucumber. They tend to be a little, well, smaller, and they're a little more dense. They don't fall apart when you put them in a, or they don't sog up quite as much.
Do you think they have generally a little tougher skins?
Yeah, I think so. The littler ones, there's the gherkins.
The teeny weeny ones.
All different sizes. My two favorite ones that I've been growing and pickling for years are called Early Fortune, which I'm getting, that's something you get through Seed Savers Exchange. And then there's another variety that I can't remember where I get it from, but it's called Parisian Pickling. And these
Is that like the gherkin, the really small guy?
It's smaller than the Early Fortune. But there's a lot of these more, think dill pickle-ish sort of thing. But I've got the Seed Savers catalog here, and there's lots of different kinds.
Well, there's some weird ones too, unusual. Let's like this one. Have you? What's it called? The Mexican sour gherkin,
yeah.
Which looks like a teeny weeny watermelon,
yeah,
kind of.
Yeah.
Have you ever grown those?
No. It says ideal for pickling. So yeah, it's supposed to be. They're supposed to be really small. Yeah, and there's white ones, and if you want to get really adventuresome, there are the long, either Asian or Middle Eastern kind of cucumbers, which are also lovely.
And those are the ones you would use in salads more?
Right. I would. If you're doing cut-up pickles, I wouldn't mind using those either. They tend not to be soft like the bigger cucumbers sometimes that you can get.
Now, do you think
they're softer?
The conventional ones that you buy in the supermarket, they have a waxy skin. Is that because they are waxed?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Some of them are.
Right. So those you're going to have to peel.
I don't do that. But it does, again, they
makes
have had
them
a,
travel.
They
yeah.
have had a mm-hmm. long life. Mm-hmm, yes, they did. Mm-hmm. So cucumbers.
So if you're buying them at the farmer's market, and especially if you can ask the farmer, perhaps they're not sprayed with pesticides, you can and should eat the peel.
Oh, I think so.
Yeah.
That's part of the taste. That's part of the taste.
There's a nice trick I used to always like for just your classic, kind of roundish, fat little cucumber. You run the tines of the fork down it so that when you slice it, it looks like it has little stripes on it or something.
Oh, little flowers.
Little roughly edges. And that's a really easy trick. And they used to say, I don't know if this is true, but you do that because apparently it releases some of the bitterness in the skin of that type of cucumber.
Oh,
don't know if that's an old wives' tale, but that's something I grew up with.
It sounds like magic, and I'm always up for magic.
Well,
so let's
it just
do
looks
that.
Pretty. But so for cucumbers, obviously we're going to think of a million kinds of salads. And I would encourage all of us to eat more salads, especially this time of year. But there are other things besides pickles and salads. Cucumbers make a lot of good beverages, for example, or soups. They can be used a lot in gazpachos, even making a kind of a white gazpacho. I did read a recipe where you used, it was yellow gazpacho because it was using yellow peppers, which are not quite in yet, cucumbers, and probably a yellow tomato or two.
Oh.
So gazpacho, which is a cold soup, is a good way. Beverages, lots and lots of beverage possibilities, like a gin and cucumber tonic cocktail, for example, or...
Oh, that does seem to be the thing. They're putting all kinds of things in mixed drinks now.
Yes.
And cucumber shows up every now and then.
And they talked all kinds of, here's a recipe for a savory peach and cucumber salad.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. It says, this is the future of fruit salad with avocados, herbs, a little spice, and peak season peaches, which we're coming right into. Another thing that I was interested in is, here's a chill out honeydew cucumber slushy, which, that's all just throw it all in the blender. But the melons are coming in mm-hmm. at the same time as the cucumbers. Mm-hmm. So this would be a very light lunch or breakfast beverage.
Is there dairy in there?
Let's see what they say.
Or
in
is
this
there
particular
ice in there?
One.
Or it's green. It looks lovely.
Yeah. Oh, this is with coconut water. What a great idea. Four cups of honeydew, 2.5 cups of coconut water, 1/3 cup of mint leaves, 2 tablespoons of fresh lime juice, and 6 ounces of cucumber peeled, and kosher salt. And you just throw that all into the blender. That actually sounds yummy.
Yeah.
I might have to do that myself.
I like that. That sounds good.
Yeah. And then the other thing, where was that recipe? It was a granita. Now, we talked about granitas a few weeks ago. Basically, this is a savory granita, which they said, serve it on oysters or something. But, I would use it there's the concept of the palate cleanser, which is where if you're having a multi-course meal or a longer, heavier meal, mm-hmm. you kind of stop in the middle, especially in this heat, and you refresh your palate mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. with something that's a little more, you know, changes up your taste buds. Basically, it's to clear out the flavor and sensations on your tongue.
Well, so, right, especially if you have kind of a spicy thing to start out with,
yeah,
or a hot thing.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
So remember, granita is something where you kind of make a slushy. You put it in a usually a metal pan because it cools faster in the freezer, and then every 15 or so minutes you stir it up. So you end up with a it's kind of like a snow cone, but it's a little more frozen, and you just serve it in a little bowl or something. So this one is peeled seeded cucumbers, lime juice, and then they put in matcha green tea powder and a little bit of salt.
Oh.
So that all kind of goes into the slushy mixture. You put it in the freezer.
There's no other liquid in there.
No, because
the cucumber
is very, well, lime juice.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But not much. 4 cups of cucumber to 1 tablespoon of lime juice, and then a 1/2 teaspoon of the green tea powder, and then in the blender, and then into the pan in the freezer, and then you keep stirring it till it firms up a little bit. You still want it like, you don't want it in a frozen block of ice. You want it kind of crystallized. And that is a nice thing to serve in the middle of the meal, at the beginning of the meal, or even at, but it's savory. It's not sweet.
Huh.
It is not a dessert. It is a palate cleanser.
That sounds like a very nice thing.
Yeah.
Good use of cucumbers.
The other thing I want to try, and hopefully if it's successful, I'll let you know, cucumbers are very good for making kimchi.
Oh.
Right. So having a pickled... If I'm successful, we will talk about the recipe. It takes about 7 days of fermentation.
If you're successful, I'll hear this yell from downtown,
yeah,
from your neighborhood and in your downtown names. There will be this, yes, it worked.
Yes, because I have a big new five liter kimchi pot or something. It's a little bit daunting, but I'm going to launch into it sooner or later. But the cucumber one seemed like that might be the place where I'm going to start. So cucumbers, for all reasons, go for it.
Good. I don't grow a lot of cucumbers, but I always like some because I like to pickle and I like to eat them. And I found that, they usually vine all over the place, but I put up a couple of cattle panels, heavy, heavy gridded things that I suppose we don't have.
They're metal, yeah.
And let it grow on a trellis. I don't have to bend over so much. And cucumbers are of that family, beans, and they put these wonderful tendrils up, and they go out there, and you can watch them. They're grabbing for things, and. What a magic thing to watch in your garden.
Especially if you've got a system for them.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'll just grab onto the plant that's next to them, and then you'll have a rather tangled mess. Well, like peas would do that, too. I just always am amazed these little tendrils go up. I've got some scarlet runner beans going just at decoration by
so
the
you
house.
Kind of, it's and called just, training them to the trellis,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, training them to the trellis. And those little... things, and I think I read someplace that they always go clockwise.
Oh, really?
Maybe
there's probably a pattern to this part of nature, you know.
Maybe it's like the water down the drain in the northern hemisphere versus this. I don't know if anybody knows. I might just lay awake at night and think about that for a while.
You could just stand there and watch them for hours, right?
I could. Anyway, 3 cheers for those cucumbers. Cucumbers, corn, kimchi, granita, beverages, salads,
peaches.
Pickles. With peaches, what a good idea.
And we don't have the local melons yet, but they're coming. They're coming.
Oh, melons. Oh.
Yep.
Don't you just love summer? This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, and you're listening to KHOI Community Radio for the Heart of Iowa. That was some good summer food memories. So, Donna,
Sweet corn. Not yet, right?
Oh, yeah. This is a preview of what's to come, but we think the sweet corn is going to be really, really late.
Well, yeah, it seems like my garlic is late this
year.
Right,
we're not going to have it by the 4th of July, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We should call Ray Olson and see how his corn is coming.
You see, you always think of the people that grow things well, and Ray Olson is the person to think about. Locally here, he does some really good sweet corn.
Well, even as you're driving, you know, outside of the city limits, you'll see some of that corn looks like it's 6 inches high, and some fields look more appropriately 12, 14.
Yeah.
We used to say knee high by the 4th of July. Well, I'm not sure we're going to make it this year, but
not for everything, no. Mm-hmm. So we started out real dry, and then we got this dump of rain. We shall see. We shall see. It is turning into summer, though. Like we mentioned, this is the solstice, summer solstice. And I have seen a few lightning bugs.
Oh, me too.
Firefly. Yeah.
Yeah, see? Along with their brethren mosquitoes. Yeah.
The brethren,
They come together.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, they're always such a thrill. Not a huge chorus of lightning bugs yet, but it is there. It is there. Oh, also, last week I saw an indigo bunting.
Ooh.
Which I think is to see one of those, okay, that's midsummer. And no, they are not bluebirds. Bluebirds are lovely, and they come a little earlier in the spring, and they have a rosy breast. Indigo bunting is just unabashedly shiny, blue, almost iridescent, and a tiny little thing. But I am glad they at least fly through my farm. I don't know where they go, but there they are. And I did see one, folks. Yes, I did.
And we've had hummingbird sightings as well.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, that's even if you, so when you're out there hot gardening sometime late in the afternoons lately, you'll hear this vroom that goes by your head. That's probably a hummingbird.
You should wear a red scarf.
Oh, what? I don't want them attacking me. I mean, oh, goodness, that'd be terrible. But I usually hear them, and then I can kind of find them. Hummingbirds. Oh, yes, yes. And we mentioned earlier that the Juneberries are, well, actually, they're kind of come and gone.
They've
juned. But mulberries. Mulberries is another tree that's coming into fruit right now. And you may think it's a messy, awful tree. If you walk underneath it, everything's all purple.
Yeah, well, that's when you find the purple bird poop all over your car.
That's true.
Or your lawn chairs.
Yep. It's the season for mulberry leavings. But if you get a chance to find yourself a mulberry tree and get underneath it and reach up and give it a try. They're ripe.
They're subtle, but they're good.
Yes, they are subtle. We're not talking a huge sugar content, but they're
or really a zing good. Like a raspberry or
no,
something.
No. They sort of look like a teeny tiny lumpy little raspberry, but mulberries. And the birds love them, as we know. And it's nice. I always enjoy watching the squirrels go up late in the season, well, the mulberries are dead ripe, and I really, truly think that the birds and squirrels do get a little tipsy on them. They just ingest all of that. I've seen squirrels just fall out of the tree and kind of shake themselves and go back up and fall out of the tree again. I do believe they are ingesting interesting substances. So three cheers for those, everybody that likes mulberries. Very good. Well, thanks for joining us today. We talked about the solstice, and happy solstice to everybody. And take it easy during this warm, warm time.
Just loll about a bit in the hammock or the porch swing.
Oh, yes. And something cold to sip on. Maybe something made out of cucumbers. It'd be good. So thanks for joining us today. And thanks to all of you KHOM members that keep us going. We just sort of finished up a fundraiser chunk of time here. And you've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We come to you live here every Tuesday at noon. We've had music by the Barn Owl Band. You heard the tune Behind the Haystack. And we'll go out with a tune called The Cloud Forest. Support this fine community radio station. If we're in your ears, put us in your heart. We're a good thing to be part of. Yes, we are. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Prisguntas.
And we've had excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.